Hello and welcome to The Property Exchange, your guide to the latest news, views and opinions in residential property, with Winkworth, with you every step of the way in the property market. Your host is writer and commentator Anne Ashworth.
Hello and welcome to the Property Exchange podcast. In this episode, the coming budget. It's going to be tough, so what impact will it have on the property market? Chancellor Rachel Reeves delivers her first budget on October the 30th. Before taking power, Labour said it had no plans to raise taxes. But we now know that taxes will definitely rise. In fact, we could be in line for higher capital gains tax on the sale of second homes and buy-to-lets, and inheritance tax bills could also go up. These threats mean that many landlords are already quitting the business, and some among the super-rich from overseas are packing their bags to leave the UK rather than pay more. What effect will these and other possible measures have on home buyers, sellers, landlords and tenants? With me to look at all of this are Dominic Agace, Chief Executive of Winkworth, and Anthony Emerson of the mortgage brokers Trinity Financial. Welcome to you both. Now, first to you, Dominic. The government's close to the end of its first 100 days. How's the property market been faring so far?
So pretty good. I think the actual election and the majority led to a bit of a boost in the property market. Unfortunately, it's been slightly undone by the current vacuum of waiting for October 30th and perhaps the over-messaging of gloom that we're sort of seeing pushed back against now. But I think from the UK's point of view, macro-wise, interest rates have made their first step down. We've the second highest growth in the, according to the OECD. So I think, the picture is looking good for people. The main market is trading well. Within that, there are obviously segments that are struggling more. And, the higher end in central London, the wealthy, high net worth individuals are deeply concerned, and there are a lot more properties available as people aren't buying at that sector because they're waiting to see the direction of travel for taxation and how that taxation will affect them. There's obviously non-DOMs and a particular new clause in that non-DOMs arrangement of inheritance tax, which is a real put-off for the international buyer at the moment.
So inheritance tax is the focus of the greatest concern.
I think for the overseas investor who moves to London, who's grown up in other areas and is a very wealthy person, having built their business and chooses to locate in London, to then be sort of told that their family wealth will be taxed in the UK because that's where they've chosen to live, is probably a step too far for many of them.
Capital gains tax hikes, are they causing landlords to leave the business?
Yes. Yes is the simple answer. I think a number of people who are looking to trade their long-held buy-to-let investment in time so that they avoid what is a presumed increase in, whilst it's not said, it's presumed increase in capital gains tax coming in October 30th. So I think it's caused, it has caused some stress. And, there was a pressure on the number of rental properties, particularly in London, because of recent regulation. But clearly, this is something that has driven some people to sell up.
Now, this is just a rumoured measure, Alan. It's very much speculation, but there has been talk about the imposition of capital gains tax on the sale of a first home. Now, this would have a huge impact on the members of the boomer generations who are sitting in big houses they bought for next to nothing and are now worth a fortune. What would your view be of such a measure?
I suppose first of all, I'd say I think this is the trouble with the vacuum we're in, which is waiting. We've had lots of messaging of how bad it's going to be, but obviously we all have to wait another sort of more weeks until we find out how bad it will be or whether it will be better than. So there are lots of rumours that are not being denied, but I do find it very hard to believe that this is something they've come in with. The Englishman's home is his castle. You know, we are property as a population. We are obsessed with our properties, and to move against them, and the generations that have sought to build their retirement funding through that would probably make them unelectable, I would have thought.
Turning from speculation to advice, what would your agenda be for a budget that would stimulate house building, give people the chance of a home of their own, and ensure that we have a well-supplied rental market?
So the first step has to be macro stability, you know, and effectively not intervening too much in the UK economy, so that the path we're on, which is the sort of decline in interest rates and growth of the UK economy, which is all looking quite positive, isn't interrupted. Because without that, there is no sort of context for people to buy and develop property. So that's a sort of big picture that needs to be attended to. And then within that, there are measures. Obviously, I think you look at on the buy-to-let sector, it's important that there's investment shown into the court system to ensure that when you remove the no-fault evictions, that for those antisocial tenants, the landlords have a route in a reasonable time frame to address those challenges. Otherwise, you know, why would you be a landlord? They're talking about replacing Help to Buy. Obviously, that's really important, because what they're relying on for these houses to be built or homes to be built is demand and the house builders to do them. The house builders, whilst planning might be easier, hopefully, they need the demand. And so Help to Buy did a good job of making sure that they focused on building first-time buyer properties because they knew the demand was there. I think beyond that, obviously, 300 planners is probably a little bit light for the UK local authorities, and you know, more investment in those to actually, again, if they want to deliver these houses. So I think there are lots of little things they can do. Obviously, the biggest one that I don't have much hope for, sadly, would be to address stamp duty. But that's a long awaited wish that I can't see happening. But clearly, that is a transactional problem. And it's also a problem for those looking to buy a home. So it prevents people from buying homes. It prevents landlords from buying properties to let out. It is, I suppose, a drag on the UK transactions and therefore social mobility.
Now, there's been a lot of emphasis on doom and gloom from our government, but for some people, this still seems like an amazing place to live. I understand that the Americans are in town and looking for properties. Have you heard that?
Yeah, well, I think they have a tax treaty, don't they? So they're not caught up or concerned about any tax changes that might be coming in. And, you know, look, the UK is, and it seems to be, in my view, in a hugely optimistic place at the moment. I think, you know, say we're growing second fastest of sort of the OECD group of nations, just behind America, I think. So that's great, encouraging. And, you know, our politics has moved to stability, really. And that was what the great message that everyone voted for at the election was, which was that, you know, the years of turmoil are behind us. We've got a majority. There's clarity. Other countries perhaps are moving more populist, and the issues within that and the drama that we've experienced is now in other places perhaps. So I think the UK is in a really good spot, and I think that gives it a great reason to invest in it. And personally, I sincerely hope and believe that some of the rumours are just that, and it will come in a bit lighter than perhaps stated.
On that basis, a great time to snap up a property in one of the super prime or prime areas of London then?
Yeah, I think you have to take a macro view on when you're looking at these things, and you know the geographical location, the infrastructure, the education, the cosmopolitan nature of London are all macro issues that will sustain its place as a very important global city. And so, you know, that picture will endure different governments, and will stay in place. So I think there's great reasons to keep buying if there are dips, to buy UK property.
So start shopping in Kensington if you're an American and listening to this. Now, before I turn to Anthony, we need to talk about interest rates. Do you think the Bank of England's been far too cautious?
I think they've been better on the way down than the way up, actually. The last thing we want is to reverse a trajectory. You know, from a property market perspective, people have absorbed where we are, and it is positive. People are happy that the trajectory is going down, and the banks, which Anthony will talk about, do price ahead of that trajectory. So I think we're in quite a good place at the moment. To rush it and to sort of spike back with inflation and have to reverse it would be pretty traumatic. So I think at the moment they're treading a pretty good path.
So steady as she goes. And on that subject, to you, Anthony, you're very close to people who are looking for finance for their transaction. What's the mood amongst your clients?
The mood amongst the clientele has actually picked up to a more positive position. I think we are stuck in this position where people are waiting to get clarity on exactly what is going to happen in the budget. So we, as mortgage brokers, are doing a lot more agreements and principles. People are house hunting, but aren't yet committing as, you know, early as we think they might have done had they known what was coming down the road. So there is a little bit of delay on that front, but the rates are getting cheaper. The lending market is definitely doing its utmost to try and support first-time buyers in particular. We've had more lenders stepping up their affordabilities as the inflationary figures have come downwards. They've eased off their stress tests and allowed people to borrow that little bit more than they might have been able to borrow 6 months ago. And we've also got lenders like Halifax and others now doing first-time buyer incentives where they allow you to borrow 5.5 times your income. And that is particularly important in the London market, where the average cost of a house compared to the average income is so vast that we need every little bit of help we can to try and get these people to affordable rates.
There's even talk of a mortgage price war. Do you think that's an exaggeration?
I think mortgages for us seem to rise as quickly as fuel prices rise on the petrol pumps, right? And when they come down just as slowly. So every bank is worried about trying to be a market leader for too long, too far, because of the amount of business that they will pull in from that. And if they don't manage their service and their proposition, they can't control their market share. So I see it from their side, but from a mortgage broker's point of view, it's every second week the same banks are repricing and repricing and repricing as the swap rates get marginally cheaper week on week. That causes a problem because we have to redo deals, redo rates, but at least it's headed in the right direction. You know, we had the exact same problem when rates were going up, because if we didn't do it on that day, we lost the rate and we were probably faced with something more expensive the day after. This way at the moment is we'll secure you something today. The chances are that we'll get you something better tomorrow or the week after. It's a positive vibe. It's a hell of a lot more work for us, but it's a positive vibe.
You're talking about a positive vibe. How low can rates go? Say if the bank cuts rates twice more before Christmas.
There was a article that came out, and I think it was from HSBC, where their economists are kind of saying that the 3.5% mark is probably where they think it might stop. We've already got 5-year fixed rates at the sort of 3.7% mark. So I don't think we've got too far to go. And considering that we've still got a Bank of England base rate at 5%, to be offering 5-year fixes at 3.77, as Dominic alluded to earlier, the lenders do try and price in advance because they don't want to be redoing all these rates. They have to at the moment because of that managing risk exposure, market share and volume. They're having to reprice just to control those numbers. But they have to hedge their loans and the money that they've set aside for that particular product. And if everyone takes that mortgage and then a week later takes another mortgage at something cheaper, that hedge is, and the funding that they put towards that is lost. So it makes them less profitable. So I think they would like the rates to settle and relatively quickly. But like I said, like that petrol price thing, they are sort of inching down. And for us, it's a bit of death by 1,000 cuts. But in a positive way.
So, quite optimistic. Now, you talked about these great deals for first-time buyers. Aren't those just available for people who've got help from the bank of mum and dad? Shouldn't the government be stepping in to give us a replacement for Help to Buy?
The Help to Buy replacement would be very, very well received. I think that if we had to do a Freedom of Information request and we had to see the actual levels of profit that the government is making off of that Help to Buy initial things that they used to do. Because we've got to the end of that five-year period now where, you know, we are remortgaging clients and we're paying back the Help to Buy or selling the property and moving on, et cetera. It'd be very, very interesting to see how much they've made. And if that's all positive and the property market continues to be supported and continues to grow in value, it's likely to be positive again. So therefore, it is a longer term thing because, you know, they have to invest in it now. They only probably see their returns in maybe up to 5 years' time. But if this government is saying that they're going to be in power for quite some time, they should have the guts to step up and actually put that on. It will support new builds. It will support more first-time buyers coming into the market. It's a great thing. But there is the other side when you say first-time buyers are getting support. Lenders are doing everything that they can. You know, we had the launch of the 1% mortgage. You know, it's got certain criteria that doesn't work so well for London because it's a max loan of max purchase price of $500,000, minimum deposit of $5,000. So effectively, they're lending 99% of the value. It's expensive from a sort of price point of view, but it's an option for people, which we didn't have before.
Which lender is involved in the 1% mortgage?
I believe it's Accord.
It's Accord.
Yeah.
We've got an awful lot of positivity out here, but there's also a lot of negativity. And we hope the Chancellor is listening to what we're saying here. Rachel, maybe we could stop you from making some big mistakes and we've given you some good ideas. But I'd like to go back for my final question to something that Dominic said earlier about stamp duty and how it needs to be addressed. If stamp duty were abolished, would it be good for the market? And how could the government replace that revenue?
How they replace it would be something probably beyond my pay grade, I feel. You know, the last time we had a stamp duty holiday and the last time we had, you know, incentives for first-time buyers up to certain levels, it was all taken very, very positively by the market. It has created a lot of first-time buyers to be able to enter the market without too many hurdles and requirements for much greater levels of deposits and cash to be able to pay these fees. And that can only be seen as a good thing. And it gets the rest of the market moving because, as you know, these things work in chains. So without first-time buyers being the first link in that chain, we don't ever get to the end of the chain where everybody ups, you know, increases and the top of the ladder then comes back down and downsizes. So I think it would be very, very well received. I think the fact that we are going to lose that first-time buyer sort of stamp duty position, I think in March of next year, is a bit sad. I do think that there's things that Rachel could do on stamp duty and incentives and what have you to increase it. Things need to be done. I don't quite know exactly how they should be doing it, but I think we should be definitely looking at it and trying to incentivize people to get involved and get into the property market again.
The government should be looking for room to manoeuvre. Over to you, Dominic. The replacement for stamp duty.
Yeah, so I thought Anthony was pretty articulate there and all the points he covered. I mean, the replacement stamp duty, I wish, is one of those subjects I wish people, there was more transparency on the economics of, because, you know, there is a huge amount of economic activity generated from transacting a house and everything that goes with it and taxation on all those activities. So surely there should be a sweet spot. It feels like it's too far because effectively we haven't had the transactions. The stamp duty have come around. The transactions have been sort of slashed by sort of 20-30% since that sort of 2014 bit. So it has stopped people transacting, which has stopped tax take. So where is that line, really? I mean, the only ideas I have, as Anthony says, it's a very big challenge, is that, you know, it needs to be less because it's prohibitive for downsizers, as Anthony said. And perhaps one looks at it as something the seller pays because, you know, that is the person, the buyer needs to can't finance the stamp duty, whereas the seller has the proceeds. And you could do something where you said, well, for downsizers, if they did it at a certain point, they wouldn't have to pay stamp duty from their proceeds. And then you'd get the housing market moving and families into bigger houses and the older generation right-sizing.
And the economy would be boosted. How about a council tax revaluation?
Yeah, so I think that's beset with huge problems, actually. I mean, obviously, the council tax subject is left alone by everyone after Margaret Thatcher's attempts to reform it back in the day and the riots that followed. It could be deeply unfair on London, really, if you looked at a council tax revaluation, because what it doesn't take account of is debt in the properties. So you may have a property worth £2 million, but in London you may have £1.5 million debt on that. So the impact is very complicated of how that would feed through. So I would suggest leaving that alone would be very much the thing to do.
So reform of stamp duty rather than absolutely ditching the system. Well, that's just about it. Dominic and Anthony, thanks very much for joining us for this episode of The Property Exchange. Thank you for your insights. Do subscribe and join us for next month's podcast.
This has been The Property Exchange podcast. For more information, go to winkworth.co.uk or find us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. The producer was Tom Maddox. For more episodes, make sure to subscribe to your favourite podcast provider.